So I wanted to focus a little bit today, again, just a little bit of a shiur, and then a little bit of reflection on that shiur, on succession. So succession is challenging in life, and succession is particularly challenging when it comes to Yahadus. I'll try to explain what I mean by that in a second. And we have here the parasha of succession. Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos Lechol Basar Isha Yedah Asher Yetzei Lifneihem V'Asher Yavo Lifneihem V'Asher Yotziim V'Asher Yevyeim V'Lo Tia Adas Hashem Katzon Asher Ein Lahem Ro'eh. The Chazal comment that when Moshe davened that he used the term Le'mor. When Le'mor means I need to know right now, that the Moshe felt that there was something extremely pressing about this, extremely pressing about succession. And of course, he's told, Kach lecha es Yehoshua b'nun, right? Ish asher ruach bo. We'll come back to that idea, this qualification of ruach bo. It's not the first time you heard that. Yehoshua's great ancestor. Ephraim, what does it say about his great answer? Yosef, right? That was the defining feature. Hanimsa chazeh ish.
Asher ruach Elohim bo.
Yeah, very good. Idea of a person of ruach is extremely important. And, you know, v'nesatam mehodcha alav, that Moshe should give his aura to Yehoshua. And we have the passage of succession. And then again, later on in Sefer Dvarim, properly understood, Moshe Rabbeinu makes the request, right? Ebronoveres haaretz Moshe Rabbeinu davens. Moshe Rabbeinu Ephraim is not davening that he should be the leader. He has no issue with that, with Yeshua taking over. But Moshe, you know, Anav Ma'od Mikol Ha'adam, so what's he open to?
He's open to coming in as a private citizen.
There you go. Okay, so this is the story of succession. So why succession do I say challenging in general? Well, of course, you know, yeah, you're going from a little bit of the theme that we discussed yesterday in terms of Shivasar B'Tamuz, Keves Echad Taseh B'Boker, Reza Keves. You have a certain routine, a known commodity, and you're going to an unknown commodity. Right? Succession is a very challenging phenomenon. You don't know exactly how it's going to run. So that's true in general. Now, let me pose the question to you guys. Why is it even more challenging when it comes to halachic leadership? What about sort of the halachic system makes this idea of succession even more challenging in general? It's not just a matter of going from security, something known, predictable, to something unknown. What's the challenge of succession from a unique challenge, din prati, I would say, in succession from a halachic point of view? What's sort of the foundation of the halachic system? Right, certainly you want somebody who's very knowledgeable, certainly you want somebody with other qualities of leadership, but what's the, it's almost the coin of the realm in terms of succession. If you think about, you know, throughout the generations, whether it's the Tanoim, the Amoraim, the Rishonim, we spend a lot of time talking about this. What is the challenge of succession? What are we really looking for? So the way that the halachic system works is not just knowledge per se, but it's, right, basically halachic competence, but also having a sense of masora. I don't mean that masora in the broadest sense of the term, but I mean in a very particular sense that this is the Kabbalah that I heard, right? So the Rav wasn't just, you know, sort of standing there saying what he thought, even though there were important moments when he broke away from a family tradition on a hashkafic issue, like political Zionism or openness to Chachmas HaOlam. But in terms of his basic halachic approach, the Rav's basic halachic approach was rooted in what? When he heard from his father, when he heard from his grandfather. It's true of his Derech Halim, but it was true of his approach to halacha in general. So the challenge of succession, in many ways, right, is that you're starting something new, but what you really hope to preserve, right, is that sense of continuity with the past, right? So if I don't know, let me give something of an extreme counter example. So Boeing probably had, I don't know, the worst 2 years in its history, these last 2 years. The 737 MAX are having all kinds of crashes. So what do they want in terms of succession? What's a virtue for them in terms of succession? What did they do? But even if you don't know what they did, what would they try to do if you were Boeing? Rami?
I assume they would tweak it and then make like a public statement saying that they've tested it several times with their new system.
Well, right, that's in terms of getting the 737 MAX back in the air. But in terms of appointing a head of a company, what would the strategy be? You don't have to be a management consultant to figure this out.
Get someone from Airbus.
Yeah, pretty much. What you want to try to do, and maybe as, civilized a way as possible, is to completely repudiate the previous administration. Wholesale repudiation, right? You know, you let out a few leaks into the press about, everybody hated him anyway, and this and that, right? And then you put in the new team and, v'yashan mipnei chadash tautzio. But halacha, you don't have that option. It doesn't exist. Moshe kibel tarim misinai, misar li yoshu li shuz, zikhenim zikhenim levim, levim manje knesses ha-gedola. Right, and Antikno shisocho is makabel from Shimon HaTzadik and manje knesses ha-gedola. And then you have a direct passage of Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, Yeshua ben Prachyan, Itai Har Bailey, Yudah ben Tabai, Shimon ben Shetach, Shmayan of Talion, Hillel and Shammai. We know all about Hillel's Talmidim, primarily, Hillel's relationship with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So you have Hillel and you have Shammai. Fine, in the second parak of Pirkei Avos, so we learn all about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had the five Ali Talmidim, Rabbi Lazar ben Hurkanis, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanan, and Rabbi Yosi Achasir, Rabbi Yeshua ben Nisan, Rabbi Lazar ben Arach. And then you take Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua, they produced Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva produced Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shemua. And you go down that list of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Meir, so you get basically to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you get to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, so that takes you to Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia is Talmud is Rav, so Rav takes you to Sura, so you have Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Yosef, and you have crossing over to Naharda, you have Shmuel, to Shmuel, the line of Shmuel, you have Rabbi Yehuda, so Talmud of Rav. From Rabbi Yehuda, you go back to Rabbi Nachman, who takes over from Shmuel, and Pumpadisa, and you have Rabba and Rav Yosef, you have Abaye and Rava, Ravina and Ravashi, and that's basically the way the system worked. Everybody could be connected to somebody else. You read the Rambam's Hakdama to the Mishnah Torah, so he elaborates on this, the 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu to Ravashi, Ravina Ravashi, right up until that point, Alacha Kibasrai, Sofara, but that pattern did not come to its conclusion with the closing of the Gemara, whether it was the Bavli or the Yerushalmi. That pattern always persisted in Jewish history, right? So, then you have the Chachmei Tzvon Africa, it was Rabbeinu Chananel, Rabbeinu Chananel ben Chushiel, you have the Rif, and you have the Rimigash, and you have Rabbeinu Maimon Adai, and you have the Rambam. You have Chachmei Sfarad, so you have the Ramban, the two different branches, so the Rashba, and the Ra'a, the Ritva, the Ran, the Rivash, Rav Chasdai Kreskes is going down that line. We're starting out from the other line, so you have the Ravan, and the Ravya, and the Maharam Rutenberg. And that line of the Maharam Rutenberg takes you down to the Rash, and the Hagos Maimurios, and the Mordechai. with a convergence of the Rosh back over into Sfarad. So the tour, so it's the whole coin of the realm here is continuity. So, like, you know, you don't have the Boeing option. So succession is always a challenge for us, because we're looking to, on the one hand, find somebody who can meet the needs of a different kind of a generation, in the Nitziv's Hakdama to Sefer Bamidbar in Parshas Pinchas, and the critical role that it plays within the Parsha in general in terms of establishing, you know, a perspective about continuity and succession and leadership. So that's a very important piece of that puzzle. You need somebody who's capable of speaking to the next generation, and then you also need somebody who's connected back to the previous generation, because Torah Shebaal Peh, right, at least until the days of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, was by definition predicated on transmission, right? That was the whole idea. So you weren't supposed to write it down. Dvarim Shebaal Peh yata rasha lekasvan. So it wasn't even up for debate. So succession, if you're able to strike that balance, a very, very tricky thing. Again, you want somebody who can speak to that next generation in a different way, but somebody who is very, very deeply immersed in the previous generation. So obviously the first major succession in rabbinic Judaism, it becomes, in my mind, the paradigmatic succession. Kach l'cha es Yoshua ben Nun ish asher ruach bo. He's echoing, of course, here the words of Moshe Rabbeinu. So, somebody remind us how Chazal interpret ish asher ruach bo. Rashi happens to quote it from the Tanchuma. What's the significance of ish asher ruach bo? Again, Yosef was described this way. Hanimsech hazaisha sheruach Elokim bo. So again, Chazal say, Rashi quotes it, isha sheruach bo, sheyachol leilech keneged rucho shel kol achas ve'achas. So kach lecha, Chazal say, esha baduk lecha, dechsev, umisharso Yeshua binu na'ar, lo yomish mitocha ohel. So Ephraim, just explain to us this dichotomy that I'm trying to elaborate about what makes the ideal candidate for succession, how Chazal understood Yeshua as having both of these characteristics.
Well, on the one hand, he's yachol lelech, you know, neged everyone, right? Meaning that he's a fierce individual thinker, and he doesn't just rely. You know, he's able to stand up for what he believes. But on the other hand, he's fully dedicated to the legacy of Moshe, and he doesn't represent a break with the past so much as a continuation of it. He's able to be both, you know, Moshe's na'ar as well as fully his own man.
Right. So I totally agree with the second part of what you said. We'll come back to revise the first part in a second. So the second part of what Ephraim said is true. Mishar so Yeshua ben Na'ar lo yamish mitocha. Lo yamish mitocha. So he was the most dedicated to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ilan, where was he when Moshe Rabbeinu came down? We spoke about Shvira Saluchos yesterday. So where was Yeshua? Was Yeshua in the Machana? He was waiting, mitach the Sahar. He was waiting for Moshe dutifully for 40 days and 40 nights. There was no havamina that he'd become involved in Egel Azav, but he wouldn't. He was just sort of hanging out there, perched between the people and Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua ben Nun, na'ar lo yamosh mitochaval. He was physically attached to Moshe Rabbeinu. No tzerteina yochal peria. That's Rashi's comment in the first Mishnah in Perkei Avos, where Moshe kibal Torah miSinai misar liYoshua. So Rashi says, "Ve'lo limda l'chol b'nei Yisrael," right? Vayim lamdas b'nei Yisrael. And the pasuk says at the end of Sefer Devarim, right, that Moshe taught the entire Jewish people. There's a difference. Like the Rav used to say, "I've had thousands of students, but I have four talmidim." that there's a difference between a Talmud and a Talmud. And Mesira means the one, Esha Baduk Lachan, Dotzer Te'ena Yochal Piria. So certainly Yehoshua represented the highest possible degree of continuity with the past. Okay. But Me'idach Gisa, Ish Asher Ruach Bo, Sheyachol Eilech Keneged Rucho Shel Kalachas V'Achas, what was needed was somebody who had that feature of character that despite his fierce devotion to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, and the past, and everything that Moshe Rabbeinu stood for, that he was going to be able to relate very deeply to the needs of this new generation, that everybody had their own perspective, right, this door, and they needed somebody who could be flexible within reason with people and be able to deal. He had some people come from this point of view. You have some people who are Republicans. You have some people who are Democrats. You have some people, davening is the most important thing in the world. Chesed is the most important thing in the world. And Torah is the most important thing. You have to find a way of balancing and keeping everybody, on the same page. And Bishalom, some people for whom social justice is the most important thing in the world. And Yoshua's tafkid was to find Shiachol Leilech Keneged Rucho Shokol Achas Ve'Achas. And that's what was, so that balance was sort of very, very fundamental to who Yoshua was. So let's now, I think, make two points that I think very strongly affirm the premise that we've laid out, that Yoshua's essential qualification was his capacity to synthesis being the most authoritative figure in terms of continuity with the ability to relate to the challenges of a new generation. Interestingly, Rashi, in his comment in Avos on that first Mishnah, says that Yoshua was chosen not just because of the notzer te'ena yochal pirya, the hasmada, but kana shem tov ba'olam, is that people had a respect for the special rapport that he had with people. He was somebody that people could easily relate to. So my Rebbe, when I was exactly your age, made such an astute observation about this. He says, there were two good candidates to take over leadership in the next generation. One of them was Yoshua. The obvious other candidate would have been Kalev. So why wasn't Kalev chosen? So he always used to point to the pasuk in Shlach. We know that from just reading the pesukim, who resists the Meraglim more frontally? The Shvach, I don't mean this as a negative thing.
Kalev.
Yeah, right? Vayas, Kalev, Esa'am, Moshe is the first one to speak out. Right? Yoshua is silent at that point. And the Torah acknowledges that Kalev in some ways surpassed Yehoshua in terms of, being more frontally resistant to the Meraglim. So what does the Torah say about Kalev? This is the word that we're going to key in on. Ve'avdi Kalev, Ekev. Haisa ruach acheres imo vayimalei acharai. Vayimalei acharai means he was fully committed to my agenda. So Rav Twersky asked, so why not Kalev? He says that was goof of the problem. Ruach acheres means that Kalev was willing to stand up, frontally confront everybody. But what was needed in that generation was somebody whose values were always going to be in the right place, but not ruach acheres imo, but ish asher ruach bo. Somebody who was yachol leilech keneged rucho shel kalachas v'achas. Akiva, what do you think would have happened if somebody came to, again, it's almost like the Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Aleph, if somebody comes to Hillel, and before that to Shammai, and says, l'mduni kol ha-Torah kula al regel achas. So what's Kalev going to do? He's going to pull the Shammai, d'chafo b'amas ha-binin shebiyado. What's Yeshua going to do? He's going to say, Bini, Dalach Sani, Lechavich Losavid, Videch Perushahi, Zilgumbor. So you're going to find a way of getting to the same place, right? We're not talking about somebody who's going to, who's going to compromise on critical principles and values, but we're looking for somebody who has a little bit of a gentler touch, right? So that Ekev Haisa Ruach Acharis Imo Vayimalei Acharai, right? What would have happened, you know, that generation, they needed a little bit of a softer touch. I think this is also, by the way, very meduyak. We talked about it last week in terms of Mei Meriva. Whatever you think the issue was, the Rambam's Kas, the Shimunah HaMorim, right? Moshe is not exactly taking the conciliatory approach, right? So that was disqualifying for a particular generation. So that, I think, is strongly affirmational of this idea that what we were looking for in that transition was extreme fidelity to the past. But with a little bit of a different style. So I think we can bring another raya to this from Sefer Bamidbar, where Moshe Rabbeinu was already setting things up. We know that there are two instances in the Chumash where Moshe corrects Yehoshua. One of them we referenced yesterday in Kol Anos Kedivurav, in Kol Anos Chalusha, Kol Anos Anochi Shomea, where he teaches Yehoshua, you gotta listen a little bit more carefully to what's going on around you. Number one. And then in Sefer Bamidbar, when we have the Eldad Umeidad narrative, Adoni Moshe Kilo Aim. And Yehoshua is upbraided by Moshe. It says, "I'm a kanei atali umiitain kolam Hashem neviin ki itain Hashem es
rucho aleihem."
So what's this adashava? So that the two points where Moshe gives Yehoshua tochacha, as he says, you need to listen more carefully. Number one, Parshas Kisisa. Number two is that your goal should not be to sort of preserve my singular status to the exclusion of allowing the people to achieve their fullest potential. Adrabo mi yitain kolam Hashem neviim. Your idea should be to give them as much spiritual ballast as possible, as much support as possible. I don't want your attitude here to be, you know, conceptualizing yourselves as strictly the defender of the faith without having a sense of confidence and optimism for the Jewish people. Mitain kol am Hashem neviim. And I want you to listen more carefully when things are going on. This is part of the training of Yehoshua. So I think that this is part of what I'd like from you guys, in terms of how I want you to think about your future roles as Marbitei Torah and Manhigei HaTorah. As mentioned a little bit earlier in the week in the context of the graduation. So I want you to have, the way that in my own way I have it, an extreme sense of fidelity to the things that you'll hear from representatives of the previous generation. For me, again, that's a hashkafa, that's a derech halimud. There's nothing that I do. However, again, you know, modest my level of communal responsibilities are here and in other places, that I don't filter through the lens of what would the Rav expect of me, and what would Rav Aaron expect of me, and Libadal ben Achaim, what would Rav Rosenzweig expect of me in any particular situation. But at the same time, the knowledge of, and this is not something that they didn't tell me many times, that every generation requires a little bit of a modification of style, not substance, not principle, but the style can be. And Dafka, you've heard from me many times that when I think there's an overcompensation, you've heard from me innumerable times when I feel like the Ava Yira balance is out of whack, I do need to point that out, because I think that is a compromise on principle. But every generation needs its own Shiyachal Leilech Hinegeruchol Shol Kalachas Ve'achas. And I would think the same thing will be true for you. You'll sense intuitively what the needs of the next generation will be, right? We're not talking about your generation, we're talking about the generation after that. So for now, the goal is to be no tzer te'ena. The goal is to be mishar so Yeshua ben Anar lo yamish mitochal. But as Moshe pointed out to Yeshua, I want you to listen very carefully. In kolanos givura, in kolanos chalusha, kolanos anochi shame. Listen, you have to be an excellent listener. And isha sheruach bo sheyachol leilech keneged rucho shel kol achas ze'achas. To sort of be able to pick up on what's said and what's between the lines, and even what's not even between the lines, it just makes it min hacharakim that it's there in terms of what it is that stylistically the next generation will need in terms of being able to transmit Torah. The premise is the transition between Moshe and Yeshua is the paradigmatic dispositive transfer. Incredibly difficult to find the right successor. Each door has its own needs. Dar dar v'darshav. And you guys should be able to find exactly what that sweet spot is in terms of total fidelity to the principles of the past, but making sure that the message is being conveyed as much as possible so that it can be a davar hanishma, and so that it can equally be b'derech, as the Gemara in Shabbos says, shemoshech es halev. And we shouldn't be mizalzel in that. Rabbi Adler always points out that, and I'm not blaming them, because I think that the sociological circumstances were so profoundly stacked against them that it would have almost been the only one who did it was the Rav, effectively. But his generation of Rebbeim, so they were almost all European born. And you know, their idea of baseball, that it was baseball was Sodom v'Amora, right? You probably can't go to a Chabura, an NCSY Kollel, that has fewer than 17 references to sports. Because it's understood that that's the language that's needed to convey. Sometimes, personally, I think they overdo it a little bit, that it's a little overkill. But the point is, that you know what they're trying to do. They're trying to meet people basher husham, and, you know, not to... And can you imagine, the space of two generations, baseball went from being basically a sign, you know, of Abizrayu Davodazara to the metaphors through which we would communicate, you know, important principles of Torah. So you should not overlook the dangers of imagining that you're in Lithuania when you're no longer in Lithuania. And it doesn't mean that you compromise under principle. It doesn't mean that you don't lead the community back towards a healthier balance. Again, I gave the example before about how I... you know, do think about the complete lack of balance between Ava and Yira, not just Ava's Hashem and Yira's Hashem, but Mor Rabcha Kemor Hashemayim versus a sense of closeness and camaraderie. These things have to be very carefully calibrated. When you see an imbalance, it doesn't just mean give the people what they want. That's far from my message. But don't underestimate the need to think meaning as deeply as you think about a Rashba, and as deeply as you think about a Ramban, so you also have to think equally deeply about how I'm going to communicate, whether it's a particular piece of Torah or the broader message, to a generation that, by definition, is growing up under different circumstances. And again, Acharon Davar, I would just add that this is becoming increasingly challenging, because it used to be, let's say, if you lived between the years 1740 and 1770, so 1770 to 1800 was not as great a change in terms of modes of communication, in terms of sociological transformation, as there is now, right? The pace of change has increased dramatically, so the need for competency in this regard is of even greater importance. And so I hope that you guys will, I can't tell you what the specific issues will be, but that you guys will will understand, you know, exactly what those needs are. Isha sheruach bo sheruach leilech keneged rucho shel kalachas v'achas, and as an expression, not a compromise, but as an expression of your fidelity to the things that you heard from the past, of the, you know, the notes here, te'ina yochal peria mishar so Yeshua ben Unar lo yamish mitoch ha'ol, you'll find the right means of communicating that to the next generation, and that it that itself it is the guarantee of the successful transmission of the Masorah.